1 Samuel chapter 25. The way it's looking, we'll have three messages out of chapter 25. That's always subject to change, but my initial breakdown, we're going to be looking at the record of Nabal and his wife Abigail and David. And it ends with Abigail and David getting married, and she becomes David's third wife. Although his first wife has been given away to someone else in marriage while he's gone. Now, what a father-in-law, huh? So anyways, I want to talk to you tonight about fools foster fools. I think it's important that you understand that a fool will only produce more fools. Now let me read you these first 13 verses, then I'll give you my introduction. We'll look at fools, fosters, or fostering fools. It says in verse 1, "And Samuel died, and all the Israelites were gathered together and lamented him, and buried him in his house at Ramah. And David arose and went down to the wilderness of Paran. And there was a man of Maon whose possessions were in Carmel. And the man was very great, and he had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats. And he was shearing his sheep in Carmel. Now the name of the man was Nabal, and the name of his wife Abigail. And she was a woman of good understanding and of a beautiful countenance. But the man was churlish and evil in his doings. He was out of the house of Caleb. David heard in the wilderness that Nabal did shear his sheep. And David sent out 10 young men. And David said unto the young men, Get you up to Carmel, and go to Nabal, and greet him in my name. And thus shall ye say to him that liveth in prosperity, Peace be both to thee, and peace be to thine house, and peace be unto all that thou hast. And now I have heard that thou hast shearers. Now thy shepherds which were with us, we hurt them not, neither was there aught missing unto them, all the while they were in Carmel. Ask thy young men, and they will show thee. Wherefore let the young men find favor in mine eyes, in thine eyes, for we come in a good day. Give, I pray thee, whatsoever cometh to thine hand, unto thy servants, and to thy son David. And when David's young men came, they spake to Nabal according to all the words in the name of David and ceased. And Nabal answered David's servants and said, Who is David? Who is the son of Jesse? There be many servants nowadays that break away every man from his master. Shall I then take my bread and my water and my flesh that I have killed for my shears and give it unto men whom I know not whence they be? So David's young men turned their way and went again and came and told him all those sayings. And David said unto his men, Gird ye on every man his sword. And they girded on every man his sword, and David also girded on his sword. And they went up after David about 400 men, and 200 abode by the stuff. I want to talk to you about fools foster fools. We have this very prominent proverb in Proverbs 26 verse 4. It says, Answer not a fool according to his folly, lest thou also be like unto him. In other words, if you treat a fool the way fools treat people, you're a fool. If you talk to fools and are around fools, you too will become a fool. Why? Because fools foster fools. There are some people you do not need to give an answer to. There are some arguments you do not need to get involved in. There are some times when the best thing you can do is just keep your mouth shut and move on. Now, verse 5 of chapter 26 there in Proverbs says, Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own conceit. In other words, there is a time for correcting fools. There is a time for not correcting fools. The best advice I can give you is get away from fools, because they will make you foolish. Now, this is an interesting location in the text. If you'll remember what we looked at this morning in chapter 24, we saw how humble David was, how he bowed himself to the ground before Saul, his enemy, how he said to Saul, "What did you come out here after? A dead dog? A flea? I'm a nobody." How did he go from chapter 24's humility to chapter 25's anger and pride? Interesting thing is, I've always heard this chapter, chapter 25, preached under something along the lines of this heading, Nabal's folly. Everybody talks about how stupid and how foolish Nabal is, for the way he answered David and the way he treated him. But can I tell you something? There's more than one fool in this story. You know who the second fool is? It's David. And I want us to look at fools that foster fools. I almost called it where two fools met. But David was not a fool at the beginning of the story. David became a fool when he tried to answer Nabal. Five things we want to look at. The first, a nation falling apart. Look with me again at verse 1. And Samuel died, and all the Israelites were gathered together and lamented him and buried him in his house at Ramah. And David arose and went down to the wilderness of Paran. Samuel was the last judge. Samuel anointed the first and second king Israel ever had. Samuel held the first unique office of prophet. Before that, there were men who prophesied, but there were not men who were called prophets. Moses prophesied, but he was not called the prophet Moses until after his time. But Samuel, in his own day, was called the prophet Samuel. The Bible says really nothing except that he died and he was buried, and Israel mourned for him. I think Israel should have been mourning while Samuel was still yet alive instead of waiting till his death. Oftentimes, people aren't fully recognized for their contribution until after they're gone. So it was with Samuel. The nation was falling apart. Samuel was the salt and the light of Israel. Samuel instructed other men of God in how to conduct their ministry. And now Samuel is gone. And notice also that David is on the move. It says in the latter part of verse 1, and David arose and went down to the wilderness of Paran. Now, where is Paran? Well, we're not really sure exactly where it is. But the way the events look to me, David is near the wilderness of Maon, because Nabal is from Maon. Nabal is shearing his sheep in Carmel, and all of this is occurring near the area of Maon. And so David has been somewhere else after he left En-Gedi. Most people believe that he went back to the cave at Adullam to be near his family, but kept his head low and stayed out of the sight of Saul. And now that Samuel has died, David recognizes he needs to get further into the wilderness, that it's not safe there, because he knows that Saul still hates him, and the only thing that's changed about Saul is God's kept him held back. So David goes away. Now what happens when all the godly people vacate an area? It becomes bad. It falls apart. What happens in a country when all the godly leaders die? It begins to fall apart if they're not quickly replaced. We have a nation falling apart. That brings us to verses 2 and 3. Nabal's fortune abounds. Nabal's fortune abounds. Look with me at verse 2. There was a man in Maon whose possessions were in Carmel. So he lived in one place, and all of his company, his business, was in another, and these are just but a few miles apart. And the man was very great, and he had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats, and he was shearing his sheep in Carmel. Now let's talk first of all about his wealth. 3,000 sheep, 1,000 goats. That's a big farm even today. If you run 4,000 head of livestock, you're a big time farmer in this country. If you ran 4,000 head back then, back before antibiotics, back before feed mills, back before range cubes, back before mineral blocks, back before round balers, back when haying was still done with a sickle and a pitchfork and a cart. We're talking about a large farmer. We're talking about a prosperous farm. Why is this so prosperous? Because sheep provide for you in two ways. They provide for you in their lambs, and they provide for you in their wool. So when he's shearing his sheep, he's selling all the wool at that time, or at least marketing it at that time. And keep in mind, everybody wore wool clothing. So he wasn't competing as we are against nylon and spandex and cotton, and all the other stuff I can't pronounce. Wool was it. And it was valuable. And he's got wool and he's got stocks. And so he's shearing his wool. This is a time when there is a great festival taking place. This is a joyous time. So he's shearing his sheep in Carmel. Verse 3. Now the name of the man was Nabal, and the name of his wife was Abigail, and she was a woman of good understanding, of a beautiful countenance, but the man was churlish and evil in his doings. He was of the house of Caleb. You know what the name Nabal means? Fool. What kind of a mother names her son Fool? What kind of a father looks at that boy on the day he's born and says, think we're going to name this one the fool? Something tells me God has a hand in what the names are given out according to what they're going to be doing. And if it's not the way that God intends it to be, he changes the name to suit his purpose. So Nabal is a fool. We've seen his wealth. Now let's look at his wife. It says his wife's name was Abigail, and she was a woman of good understanding. You know what that means? She was smart. This rich man got a smart wife. But not only did he get a smart wife, this lady had it all. You know, some people get the brains and some people get the looks. But when we look at the fortune of Nabal, his wife was smart and good looking. It says she was of a beautiful countenance. That means she was really good looking. Now, if you're a father of a beautiful, good looking girl, why would you let her run off and marry a fool? Well, this fool had a lot of money. And money tends to cover up a lot of flaws, does it not? But Nabal here is not just but a fool, but he's also churlish and evil in his doings. He's crooked. He's wicked. He's evil, he's stingy, and he mistreats people. Notice the last phrase in verse 3. He was of the house of Caleb. Caleb had a great name among Israel. You'll remember when they sent 12 spies out to spy out the land? The 12 spies, one from each tribe, came back and gave their report. And 10 people said, we be not able to take the land. It's full of giants. We look like grasshoppers. But 2 people said, let's go at once and possess it, for we're well able. God's on our side. One of those people was Joshua, and he became the leader after Moses. The other person was from the tribe of Judah, and his name was Caleb. Of all the people in the tribe of Judah, one was sent out to spy out the land, and that was Caleb. So here we have Nabal, the descendant of a war hero, because Caleb lived all 40 years in the wilderness, and when they went in to take the land, Caleb said, I want the mountains I walked on. And they said, all right, go get them. And Caleb led his family up, and where the land they possessed was inhabited by giants. And Caleb's clan killed giants and walled city. So Caleb was a man of renown. And if you were from Caleb's family, you were somebody. So Nabal's fortune abounds. So that brings us to verses 4-8. The need to feed an army. Have you ever used that phrase? You cooked enough to feed an army. I think we discussed that this morning, didn't we, Nancy? Feeding an army. We talk about that. We talk a lot about cooking enough to feed an army, or we'll need enough to feed an army. We often contemplate. I think about that in the mornings when I cook breakfast for the church. I was talking to a couple in the grocery store this morning, and they said, you're hungry. I said, no, I'm looking to feed about 30 people. And they're like, really? And they're like looking at me like, you got a big family? I said, no, our church does that every morning. But David really does need to feed an army. It's not just an expression. It's a necessity. Keep in mind that David has 600 men with him. And I venture to say these men have their wives with them at times. Maybe not full time, but oftentimes. David had wives that traveled with him. These other men probably had wives that traveled with them, kids that traveled with them. We're talking about a large group of people that need to be fed. That brings us to verse 4 through 8. And David heard in the wilderness that Nabal did shear his sheep. So David's in one of these caves hiding out around Maon and Paran. And he hears that Nabal is fixing to shear his sheep. Someone gives word to him, this wealthy farmer. And David sent out 10 young men. And David said unto the young men, get you up to Carmel and go to Nabal and greet him in my name. David said, go and tell him who you're coming on behalf of. Go and tell him this is for David. Now, why does he say, greet him in my name? Because Nabal is of the tribe of Judah. David also is from the tribe of Judah. Keep in mind, Israel is not real united here. So people tend to still remain in their tribes. Remember, Saul had all of his generals and all the people around him were all Benjamites. And he said, do you Benjamites want the guy from Judah to be king? No, the Benjamites wanted someone from Benjamin to be king. So that same feeling would be found in Judah. And when the men and women of Judah heard that God had anointed David to be king, they rejoiced because now we're going to have a king from Judah. So when these young men came and said, we're here on behalf of David, Nabal's logical response would be, hey, yeah, he's going to be king here one day. God's already anointed him through the prophet Samuel. Yeah, what does he need? Can I help him in any way? This would be a wise political decision. Let me tell you something. How many presidential candidates are still in the Republican side of the race? Five, six, six? What if you knew today which of those six would be president and you had money to spend? Be a good time for you to get in good with them when nobody else seemed to be as interested. Everybody in Judah knew who was going to be king. Almost everybody in the entire country of Israel knew who was going to be king. Whether they liked it or not, it was common knowledge. But David's not going there saying, I'm the guy that's going to be king. David is going there saying, I'm the guy who's been protecting your sheep. The reason he says, go in my name, is because David has been providing protection for the sheep and the goats of Nabal. Look at verse 16 with me. This is one of the servants of Nabal talking to Abigail, and he says, they, that's David's army, they were a wall unto us both day and night, all the while we were with them keeping the sheep. So while they were running these 3,000 head of sheep and goats in the wilderness of Maon, David was sending his men out to protect the sheep. Why? David grew up a shepherd. Not only are they of the same tribe, they're of the same occupation. When you have that many sheep, you cannot run that farm with your own kids. You've got to hire help. What do we know about hired help? Jesus says the hireling doesn't act like the shepherd. The shepherd actually owns the sheep. The hireling flees when the wolf comes. What did David do? David sent his men out to keep Nabal's sheep from being stolen, to keep wolves from attacking Nabal's sheep. David used his men, and even Nabal's own servants said they were a wall to us. You know what that means? They didn't let anything get in, and they didn't let anything get out. Now, if I live in a town down the road, and somebody's up here protecting my sheep, guess what? I'm glad they're doing that. And if somebody said, hey, I'm here on behalf of David, I would say, oh, I like that guy. Boy, he saved me a lot of money. I usually lose 10% to sheep rustlers every year. Well, if you've got 3,000 sheep and you lose 10% to wolves, to stealing, to rustling, David just saved you 300 head of stock by the testimony of your own men. Now, David says in verse 21, now David had said, surely in vain have I kept all this fellow hath in the wilderness, so that nothing was missing of all that pertaineth unto him, and he hath requited me evil for good. You and I don't understand what it's like to be raising sheep and goats in the wilderness. We live in the United States. Cattle rustling seldom occurs, but we've had a few instances lately, and you would think everybody's cows are getting stolen. I saw a deal on the news, cattle rustling's up 350%. I'm like, whoa! And they're like, yeah, there's 4 cases in the last 6 months. I went, oh, it's not that much. But what if you lived in a land that was Israel? And you had a king that really only cared about himself. And you were surrounded by enemies on every border. And you didn't have this awesome military with planes to defend you. And you had raiding parties from the enemy like the Philistines and the Ammonites and the Amorites and the Canaanites and the Perizzites that would from time to time just go around stealing sheep and stealing corn and stealing grain. You had an army of 600 men watching over your stock. And someone came and said, hey, I'm here on behalf of so-and-so's army. What would your response be? Read them in my name. Verse 6, here's what he wants them to say. Thus shall ye say to him that liveth in prosperity. Say this to the guy that's got all the money. Got the wife, the smart, good-looking wife, all the money, all the stock, all the wool. Say this to him. Peace be both to thee, and peace be to thine house. Peace be to all that thou hast. In other words, we're praying God to bless you, your family, and all your stuff. I'm here from David, and he just wants to pray that God would bless everything you have. It's not I'm here from David and you have a bill to pay. It's I'm here from David and we want God to prosper you. What a way to start a conversation. If someone came and started that conversation with you, how would you respond? Verse 7. And now I have heard that thou hast shears. Now thy shepherds, which were with us, we hurt them not, neither was there aught missing unto them. All the while they were in Carmel. What's he doing? He's reminding them of what David said he did. He said, I kept the guy's sheep. Now listen, if you have this much head, not one of them came up missing. That's amazing. You ought to at least give the guy half of what you normally lose. So that young men are appealing here and saying, we've helped you. You don't have anything missing. We know that you're having the shearers here. These are hired people who are good at shearing sheep. When people would shear their sheep, they would throw a festival that often lasted for a week. They would get real liberal with their money because they all of a sudden had a bunch, so they would spend a bunch. And they would throw big lavish parties and they would have everyone over and they would spread it around and everybody would really live it up for a week or two. David doesn't show up for a week-long party. David's not interested in coming and being in the party and getting the recognition and all that. David knows what's going on. David knows what's happening. He says, we know you're fixing to have a festival and we're not going to be able to attend because quite honestly, the king of our country would kill me if saw me out somewhere having a good time. Verse 8. Ask thy young men, and they will show thee. Wherefore, let thy young men find favor in thine eyes. For we come in a good day. Give, I pray thee, whatsoever cometh into thy hand unto thy servants and to the son of David. In other words, whatever comes into your hand, whatever extra you have, whatever we saved you, give us some of that. If we saved you 10 lambs this year, if we saved you a dozen goats that you would normally lose, just give us a portion of what we saved you. And give it to thy son, David. David's referring to him as a father figure, as someone he respects. He says, now, what can you spare us? Because we are an army in need. Now listen, I don't want you to think that David is going around begging. I think you're going to find in the future when David goes out and raids other countries and raids other clans, He's bringing all their livestock back. He stops at all these towns in Judah and says, here's some goats for you, here's some cattle for you, here's some sheep for you. And every time David goes out and gets wealth from these neighboring clans and tribes that are attacking Israel, he shares that wealth all over Judah. So David is simply asking, I've got an army here. I've rescued cities in the past. We could use something to eat. We have an army to feed. Give us whatever you can spare out of what we've saved you this year and lost. Guys, does that sound unfair to you? Does that sound demanding? Does that sound like David's asking for something he has no right to ask for? What do you think the guy's name who's fool, what do you think he's going to say to that? Let's look at verses 9 through 12 and see Nabal's foolish answer. Nabal's foolish answer. And when David's young men came, they spake to Nabal according to all those words in the name of David and ceased. They said everything David told them to say, and then they just stopped. They didn't add to it and take away. They didn't try to make it better. They basically gave a verbatim account of what David had to say. Nabal's answer, verse 10. And Nabal answered David's servants and said, who is David? Who is the son of Jesse? There be many servants nowadays that break away every man from his master. Oh my stars. Who is David? Who is the son of Jesse? He's a nobody. He's a nobody. It doesn't matter who he is. I could care less who David is, who the son of Jesse is. Why does he say the son of Jesse? I'll tell you why. When Abigail runs out to meet David a little bit later in this chapter, when she starts finishing her address to David, she says, I know beyond the shadow of a doubt you're going to be our king. Why? Because everybody knew that when Samuel went down to Bethlehem, he said, call the house of Jesse. And Jesse had 8 boys, remember? And everybody said, oh, Samuel's going to anoint one of Jesse's boys to be king. And 7 of them boys passed in front of Samuel, and the Lord didn't pick any. And Samuel said, is there anybody left? Jesse said, well, there is the youngest, but he's watching the sheep. Samuel said, go get him. We don't eat till he's here. When David walked up in front of Jesse, in front of his 7 older brothers, in front of the elders of Bethlehem, when David walked up, the Lord said to Samuel, arise, anoint him with oil. And he poured oil on David's head in the midst of his brethren and said, you are going to be the next king of Israel. So when Nabal says, who is David? Who is the son of Jesse? Big deal. I don't care about David. I don't respect David. I don't respect his dad, and I don't respect his family. They're a bunch of nobodies. I'm Nabal. I'm a descendant of Caleb. I'm somebody. That's how you respond to the guy that's kept all your stuff safe? Look at the next verse. He says, let's look there at verse 10 again. There be many servants nowadays that break away every man from his master. He says David ought to be back there serving Saul. He shouldn't be out here running around in the wilderness. This guy don't have a clue, does he? You ever wonder how a guy like this got his money? You ever wonder how a guy with no more sense than this has a farm with 3,000 head of livestock on it? There be many servants these days. He's calling David a rebel and wrong and out of line to not be serving under Saul. This guy is believing that Saul ought to be fully supported and that David ought to stay there. Now here's the real reason. He's making this up about David. He's giving the flip side of the coin about David. But here's the real reason why Nabal don't want to give anything to David. Verse 11. Shall I then take my bread and my water and my flesh that I have killed from my shears and give it unto men whom I know not whence they be? Let's count it up here. You ready? My bread, that's 1. My water, that's 2. My flesh, that's the meat, that's 3. My shears, that's 4. And one sentence, he uses the word my 4 times. What's the real problem with Nabal? Nabal loves his money more than anything else. And because David kept it and Nabal makes more, that's just more for Nabal. He's not sharing. Why? He's churlish and evil. Nabal's a fool. He's living up to his name. His wife even says, my husband is foolish. I guess that's the only downside of having a smart, good-looking wife, isn't it? She knows the truth about you. She's smart enough to see through you. My, He said, why should I give that to someone whom I know not? My friend, he knew who David was. He knew where David was coming from. He knew what David was going through. He just simply doesn't want to share what he has with anyone else, so he belittles David and says, I don't owe you anything. What is Nabal? He's a rich bully, and he's got away with this for a long, long time. Brings us to verse 12. So David's young men turned their way and went again and came and told all those sayings to David. You know, these young men conducted themselves perfectly, didn't they? They just picked up their stuff and left. That's not typical of young men. Young men typically are more hot-headed, more quick to make rash judgments. Young men are more quick to pop off and smart off. These guys should have, you know, probably gave Nabal an earful, but they didn't. They did what they were told to do. They took the message they received. They returned and went back, told David. Now that brings us to verse 13. We've seen a nation falling apart. Nabal's fortune abounds. The need to feed an army. Nabal's foolish answer. Let's look at a narcissistic and foolhardy attack. A narcissistic and foolhardy attack. David does something here that's selfish and self-centered. He does it without thinking. He does it without praying. He does it without even hesitating. He just takes off and attacks Nabal. Look at verse 13 with me. And David said unto his men, gird ye on every man his sword. And they girded on every man his sword. And David also girded on his sword. And there went up after David about 400 men, and 200 abode with the stuff. David's response is this. Everybody arm up. In the military, we would say, lock and load. You know what that means? Put a magazine in and put a round in the chamber. Let's get ready for battle. Affix bayonets. We're going to charge. This is a matter of war. Every man. David has 600 men with him. All right, everybody, get your sword. We got work to do. Why does he tell everyone to get their sword? Is he going to go kill some sheep so they have something to eat? Get your sword. Let's go kill a few of those sheep that he owes us. Let's take what's ours. Does he say, well, Nabal's not going to pay us. Every man get your sword. We're going to go raid some enemy village and eat their sheep. No. He says, every man get your sword. We're going to go kill every man that's in Nabal's house. Look with me at verse 22 of this chapter. David says, so and more also. He's talking about the evil that Nabal done. He's going to do what Nabal did to him and more also. So and more also God do to the enemies of David if I leave all that pertain to him by morning light, any that pisseth against the wall. You know what that phrase means? Anybody that pees standing up. Who is that? That's the men. David is going to kill every male child in Nabal's house. Why? He's going to wipe Nabal's name out of Caleb's lineage. You're a disgrace to your family. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill your sons. I'm going to kill your servants. I'm going to kill every male that has anything to do with you. That's why he says, every man get your sword. Why does David take 400 men down there to kill a farmer and his shearers and his shepherd? It does not take 400 men to raise 3,000 sheep. Why doesn't David just say, all right, 20 of you guys go down there? Because David is not thinking right. David is thinking about his own emotions, his own pride. He's been insulted. He's been hurt. He's been cheated. This is foolhardy. This is a hurry up, hasty decision that's not been thought through. Well, I've got 600 men here. Nabal's got some shepherds and they've got shearing shears. Let's just go wipe them out. When have we seen David act like this? When have we noticed that David did this? The way David's been treated by Nabal is wrong, but let me ask you this. Is it worth going to war over? I'm not trying to say that what Nabal did was right. I'm saying what Nabal did was wrong. But you know what my mama used to say, don't you? Huh? Two wrongs don't make a right. What's David doing? He's answering a fool according to his folly. He's doing to Nabal what Nabal did to him. He's getting down on the level of Nabal and acting like Nabal. This is David who just ran off King Saul. This is David who humbled himself and won victory over Saul through the sovereignty of God. This same David neglects the sovereignty of God and now says, I'm going to attack Nabal and wipe him off the face of the earth. How does that happen from one chapter to the next? What do we take away from this? We take away from this is this. Just because you had a victory in Jesus today doesn't mean you're not subject to doing something really stupid. Just because God sovereignly stopped you from committing evil today does not mean God will not stop you from doing stupid tomorrow. God has not promised to stop us every time we get out of control. God may allow us to run our course and wallow in the mire a while. Just because God has rescued us once does not give us the right to make hasty decisions and trust that God will bail us out next time. There's a common saying that says we're going to do something even if it's wrong. I think that was David's thought when he took off in verse 13. I'm going to do something about this even if it's wrong. Fools foster fools. The application of this is that if you are around fools and are having to deal with fools, if you continue on, you're going to become a fool yourself. If you see fools talking, if you see fools in business, don't go to business with them. Don't get in a conversation with them. I remember one time I was invited to a Bible study at another church of another denomination. I didn't want to go, but I was trying to have some influence on this guy. He said, you need to go to this Bible study with me. And I did not want to go. We went. And I heard some of the most outlandish stuff I ever heard said. There were like 30 men in this room. My friend leaned over at me and said, stand up and correct these guys. I was like, no, I'm not. He goes, why not? You know what to say. Yeah, I could win an argument with a fool, but I'd come out just as foolish as they are. Could David defeat Nabal and his shepherds? But what would it do to David? It would make him. It's not about winning. It's not about losing. It's about protecting ourselves from acting like fools. Just because someone says something stupid on Facebook doesn't mean that you have to comment back. Just because someone sends you a dumb email saying if you don't share it with 10 of your best friends, God won't bless you, don't mean you need to write them a 4-page response to their unbiblical foolishness. You will make yourself out to be a fool just as big as they are, even though you're right. What happens when we're done wrong by a fool? We chalk it up and learn our lesson. They're a fool. My dad had another wise saying. He said the first time that you cheat me, shame on you. Second time you cheat me, shame on you. David should have said, shame on Nabal, and moved on. He shouldn't have went and attacked me. But next Sunday morning, we'll see that God has more than one way to stop someone from doing evil. You and I just don't need to answer a fool according to his folly, because fools foster. Let's pray. Lord, I pray you would take what we've learned tonight, what we've seen in the life of David, to be a fresh reminder to us how quickly we can make mistakes and bad judgment, become foolish. Pray, Lord, that you would help us to recognize that sometimes engaging fools will only make us look to be foolish. So help us, Lord, to use our discernment. Help us not to be hasty in our decisions. Help us, Father, to seek your face and to pray about things before we do them so that we respond rightly regardless of how we're treated. Pray that you would help us to do that in Jesus' name. Amen.